A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 366. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about the nightmare worlds of H.G. Wells. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So we are looking at this Sky Arts production from 2016 that has four short adaptations, 20 to 30 minute kind of range, for some of the lesser known H.G. Wells stories, and in particular short stories that he wrote that are more horror supernatural styled rather than the science fiction that he's best known for.
That's right. And unusually, perhaps, they're presented to us by H.G. Wells himself, played by Ray Winston, who introduces the stories with some sort of dramatic readings or comments from them, and may pop up at the end of episodes to give us some sort of moral message, I suppose, or a little commentary at the end as well. So it's quite strange that H.G. Wells almost telling us these stories himself on a TV production.
Yes, that's right.
So last time we talked about the first two stories that were broadcast on the same evening. Let's turn to the second batch of two stories. We start with The Moth, although we perhaps should mention, Brian, that the order of these seems to vary depending on what medium you're watching it on. I think on the DVD, this may be the first story, and I think it's the first story I saw as well.
Yes, it was the first story on the DVD that I watched. So, yeah, the order there was different from broadcast for one reason or another.
Yeah, of course, they're all independent little stories. The Moth is about two rival entomologists who are competing for superiority at their scientific society. Very Edwardian gentleman sort of scientific society, with them both presenting papers. And in particular, Dr. Hapley taking great fun and sport by abusing his rival, Professor Porkins, and picking holes in his scientific work. But when Porkins dies suddenly, it seems for a while that Hapley can now rest on his laurels as the sort of the winner of this intellectual competition. But of course, it wouldn't be an H.G. Wells story if that's all that happened, Brian.
Yes, there is the discovery of a new moth which seems to haunt him. And the more he sees it, the more this moth seems to resemble his deceased scientific rival, which sort of gets stranger and leaves him somewhat detached from reality. So very strange.
Yes, we talked last time about some of the hallucinogenic stuff in this production, and this is quite weird and trippy as well, isn't it?
Yes. James Wilby played Professor Polly in this.
And Dr. Hapley was played by Rupert Graves, who's probably best known to television viewers for playing Inspector Lestrade in Sherlock. But he's also been in, I think, Doctor Who. He's in another H.G. Wells production, which we'll mention in a moment, that might come up on our roster. He's quite a well-known presence on television.
And The Moth was broadcast on February 4th, 2016.
And then also we have the last story. It goes by the title of The Purple Pileus, if I'm saying that right. That's about a timid shopkeeper who appears to run a bakery, and he has dark thoughts about his selfish wife, and in particular about murdering her. His relationship with his wife is not good. He goes on these walks in the woods where he ruminates upon it and comes up with various methods of killing her, but also, in a rather dark turn, thinks about ending his own life, which leads him to a sort of strange discovery in the woods.
Yes, I'm not sure if the thoughts of suicide are darker than the thoughts of murder, but it certainly has some dark and strange things to it, which maybe becomes stranger when he decides to eat a toadstool that has these hallucinogenic properties, and he seems to have a personality change with, if anything, makes life better for him in odd ways.
Yes, the purple pileus seems to have some remarkable powers and effects on him, and for a while, things go a bit better in this story.
That is, until someone else comes upon his stash of the pileus, and things go in strange directions there as well. So this has Sean Parks as Coombs and Leanne Best as Evelyn.
And again, I think the cast stretches possibly to four in this one, but that's about it. It's a very, again, a very stripped down production. Strange little story to finish with, to be honest, but we'll talk about that perhaps when we get to our own thoughts. And it does have that sort of, not only that hallucinogenic aspect, which is clearly part of the story this time, but it also has that slightly strange, as if it's a theatre production, with characters stepping through door frames, but with no attached walls or anything like that, Brian.
Yes, it does have an unusual look and feel to it. And yeah, maybe this one is a bit of an oddity, but I think the whole series, in a way, is something of an oddity. And this one was also broadcast on February 4th, 2016. As all of these, it was on Sky Arts.
And as we talked about last time, this is not our first encounter with H.G. Wells on the small screen. We've been through a few of his adaptations.
Yes, absolutely. H.G. Wells, of course, is very important to science fiction and the origins of science fiction, and to British science fiction as well. And we've looked at a couple of productions of The Invisible Man. The 1950s version we looked at was, I believe it said in the opening titles, based on the character from H.G. Wells. It was not based on the story as at all, and it was really the look of the character and the idea of a scientist becoming invisible that was in that 1950s production, which was interesting to see, but didn't have that much of H.G. Wells in it. Was sort of notable for having Deborah Watling. Long before she was a companion on Doctor Who, she was Victoria in the late 60s. But here in the 50s, she was the niece of the Invisible Man, and she was about age 10 in the production, I think.
And it's it was a slightly humorous production, or in fact more than slightly humorous. And I think one of the things I remember from it was Deborah Watling clearly finding it all quite funny at times, I think, with the various effects that were being done practically to have objects moving around as if carried by the Invisible Man.
Yes.
And of course, turning from a humorous version of it, we then considered a very faithful adaptation of The Invisible Man from 1984 on British television, which of course was quite dark and sinister and quite faithful to the book, which of course has all this weird stuff about the effects that invisibility is having on Griffin's mind in the book. So yeah, that was very good, I think. We enjoyed that one.
Yes, that one was very good. And The Invisible Man itself is a very dark novel. The main character who becomes invisible is not a nice person. He spends a lot of time beating people up. And that was carried over into that production. But there have been lots of adaptations of H.G. Wells' work from a variety of the things he wrote.
Yes, of course. Possibly my favourite of the three would be the first Men in the Moon from 2010, which had the rather impressive duo of Mark Gatiss and Rory Kinnear in the lead roles. That was great fun, I remember, and great stuff.
Yes, that was very good.
Yeah, we did love that one. And of course, many of his books have made it to the big screen. Several productions of The Invisible Man or The Time Machine or War of the Worlds are out there. We'll perhaps come to some of those later. We might get to them.
Yes. Many of them, as you say, have been done as movies rather than television. The Island of Dr. Moreau has also been done. But there is a British television version of War of the Worlds from 2019, which we may yet get to. We haven't covered it yet.
Yeah, no, that's one to talk about at some point. I look forward to that one because it wasn't terribly well received at the time, but perhaps is worth a revisit. But anyway, that's for the future.
Yes, and then there was also this television film about the life of H.G. Wells, starring Michael Sheen, which I don't think is currently available. It's from 2006, but that's something to think about as well.
And, of course, having just seen Michael Sheen in Good Omens again and talked about him recently, and, of course, he's been doing his lockdown drama series with David Tennant, I would actually quite like to have seen Michael Sheen play H.G. Wells. I wish that one was available to have a look at.
Yes, and Michael Sheen has a history of playing a lot of real people in various productions, so seeing him take on this one would be interesting.
Yes, Kenneth Williams, Tony Blair.
Frost.
Yeah, he's done, of course, yes, that's right, David Frost in Frost Nixon, and Brian Clough, the football manager as well. So yes, he does do that quite well, doesn't he?
Yes, he's one of the few people who sort of specializes in that.
Yeah.
At any rate, I think we're at the point where we can talk about some of our own thoughts and opinions about this production. So, Eamon, what did you like about The Nightmare Worlds of H.G. Wells?
So if we talk in generals before we get to specifics for the individual stories, I did like the cast. They get a good cast together for this. There's some interesting people, although, you know, it's only two or three main characters in each of these productions. But, they, you know, people like Michael Gambon and Rupert Graves, pretty good to watch on screen. So I like that part of it. What about yourself?
I think that's right. I think they did have a good cast in there. I think also Adrian Shergold's direction is very good. It's consistently directed in an interesting way and uses low lighting and does things quite well. So the look and the feel of it, I think, was very good.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mentioned this almost theatre sets on a stage where you don't see the edge of the set. It's just darkness surrounding the main area and the main actors. He does some very interesting things and does some distortions, and as we've mentioned, the fisheye lens, I think, and some hallucinogenic stuff. They've certainly gone for it in terms of making it look distinctive. And I also quite like the modern contemporary music that goes with it as well, from Massive Attack and the Cocteau Twins. So that's good as well.
Yes, they had, I think, not a lot to work with in this. Certainly in terms of sets and in terms of cast, they didn't have a lot to work with in this. But they really pushed things out with some of the other aspects, with music, with direction, with how it was shot. And that was nice. It was nice to see those types of things being used to make this interesting and distinctive.
Now, the episodes are fairly short. We could probably rattle through them. If we start in original broadcast order with the late Mr. Elvesham. Anything in the sort of pluses and minuses to say about that production, Brian?
That one was my favorite of the four, and I think the cast really sells it. Having Michael Gambon there, and yeah, the way it was played, I think, worked very well. And I think it's the most science fictional of the four stories. And to me, also the most interesting of the four. So I thought this one was the interesting one of the four.
I would agree. I mean, I'm not a Wells scholar, but this was the one story that I had heard of. And yeah, you know, Luke Treadaway versus Michael Gambon. These four productions, they all seem to be, they revolve around a conflict between two central characters playing off each other. It works best in this one. And of course, as you say, once you figure out what the science fiction aspect is and what Mr. Elvesham is up to, it's all quite well done and quite impressive stuff. So yeah, probably my favourite of the four as well, I think, Brian.
Yeah, for sure.
So then we have The Devotee of Art, an unusual tale about an artistic subject literally emerging from the canvas to sort of form a relationship with the artist while he's, I could say neglecting, or I could say abusing his wife, Brian. So it was a tricky one to watch in a way.
Yeah, this one was not one of my favorites. It was interesting in how it was shot and what they did with the painting, but a lot of it was about the abuse of his wife and the sort of violence against women. And yeah, there were some things that were uncomfortable in it, and I didn't think it was as interesting, and it didn't have the interesting dynamic to it in the same way that the late Mr. Elvisham did.
No, I think it is a problematic watch, and we'll come back to those problems in a few minutes, but I will say that the effect of St. Catherine, the actress actually appearing or sort of emerging from the canvas, which I'm thinking was largely done practically rather than CGI, looks pretty good. It's very creepy. That's very well done. And I did like that moment. But the rest of it is pretty unfortunate and, horrible in places, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the performances were good, but the story and what the characters had to do was, not as appealing.
So then we get to story three, The Moth, another sort of central battle between two male characters, although this time one of them dies fairly early on in the story, and then we just get Rupert Graves and the titular Moth as Graves almost literally climbs the walls with what's happening to him. What did you make of this one?
This one was not bad. Again, the performances were good. The story of it was okay, but it was really constructed around the one idea, which was fine. It was a little bit slight, but it was all right.
And it was probably the one that we both watched first, as it happened. And so it introduces you to this idea of this stripped-down productions. Very few actors. The sets are sort of slightly reduced. There's a lot of blackness and darkness around the edges of the frame, as it were. So it sort of gave us the idea that this was not entirely straightforward productions. I quite like it when Rupert Graves as happily is going sort of bonkers because of this moth that's haunting him. But yeah, it does feel a bit sort of that's all there is to it in the end, is that him and a ghost moth that may or may not be some connection to his former rival.
Yeah, it's a pretty good choice as a first episode, which it wasn't an original broadcast, but in some of the distribution it has now, it is listed first. So, it's not bad as a starting point.
Which brings us to The Purple Pileus. And unfortunately, Brian, as you pointed out in our notes, we're back to violence against women again, I'm afraid.
Yes, very much so. And yeah, this was not one that worked for me. It was sort of based around the central character's thoughts of murder and of suicide and of him finding this mushroom and being high on drugs for most of the time. So a little bit odd. I'm not surprised that this is not a better remembered story, that it's one that we don't particularly talk about with H.G. Wells. So yeah, this one I would say didn't work for me.
No, it didn't work for me at all. I found this one. And of course, this is the one that you watched last, or was broadcast last. And I think it's last in the order I watched them as well. And it really left me with a very, dare I say it, an unpleasant taste in my mouth, but not from toadstools. This is just, it felt unpleasant, nasty, and also a bit odd as well.
Yeah, so we should probably more specifically get into what we thought was on the negative side for this series. So putting it all together, what were the things that you struggled with here, Eamon?
Well, as you can tell, we've struggled a little bit with all four of the stories, or at least three of them. I also had in the negative column, I didn't like Ray Winston as H.G. Wells. Ray Winston, very well-known British film and television actor who has had a very impressive career. He sort of made a bit of a sort of role for himself as playing sort of hard-nosed either copper-type characters or criminal-type characters. He's got that London gangster vibe to him, and he seemed to bring that to the portrayal of H.G. Wells, a slightly threatening character with an unusual haircut or hairpiece that he's wearing for this performance. And the voice, his sort of gravelly, gruff London gangster voice, didn't really work for me. And as you probably know, Brian, as part of my research for this episode, I listened to H.G. Wells' own voice. I don't know, have you heard that remarkable American radio interview where H.G. Wells and Orson Welles meet in a radio studio and are interviewed together?
I have not. I'll have to listen to that at some point.
It is available online and it's remarkable.
Yeah, Ray Winstone was a strange choice for this. And I don't think they had to go with an impersonation or a matching accent for what H.G. Wells actually sounded like. But I do think they could have made a better choice of how he was portrayed than this one. And I don't think it's particularly Ray Winstone's fault. I think the approach they used for how he would be in this was a strange one. What it reminded me of was the readings of the M.R. James stories that Christopher Lee did.
Oh, yes.
Where Christopher Lee was playing M.R. James and introducing stories, and in that case he was reading the text of the stories, and we did have images and portrayals of what was happening on top of that. And that was also something where it was not an authentic portrayal of what M.R. James was like, but I think it fit into what they were doing much better than this did.
Yes. And we've seen a couple of, you know, great actors do story readings in shows we've considered. You know, Christopher Lee could have read the phone book to us and I'd have been quite happy, Brian. And Tom Baker, of course, we did as well, reading stories. I was less keen on Ray Winston. I would, you know, as you say, probably not his fault. He is a great actor and a great screen presence, but playing H.G. Wells, perhaps not in this interpretation for me anyway.
Yeah, I think he was miscast and the direction of him and how it was conceived didn't work that well. I would agree that that isn't great in this. And the portrayal of women and the inclusion of violence of women so prominently in two of these were a major issue with this and made it much harder for me to enjoy this production.
I think the only female character in the four episodes who gets any, what we would call in that modern term, agency, is actually a sort of fantasy character of St. Catherine who emerges from a painting. All the other female characters are, they're almost over...
victims.
Yes, they're victims. Yes, exactly.
The other thing I would say that was that these tend to be rather slight. It's a nice idea to say, okay, there's a nice kernel, a nice idea from this story, and we'll fill that out to a little dramatic presentation. But I found that most of them were slight. And apart from the late Mr. Elvisham, they were lacking in having much to really pull me in.
Yes, I would agree. The late Mr. Elvisham's an interesting watch. Possibly The Moth is, you know, not too bad. And then the other two, very unfortunate, just using women as victims with quite a lot of violence against them. And it does feel like H.G. Wells' lesser stories, the ones we haven't heard of, and perhaps they should have remained slightly more obscure, Brian.
Yes, I think as a way to celebrate the anniversary and the life of H.G. Wells, this was not the best approach. There are other lesser-known stories that they could have used that I think might have been more interesting. They could have done some things with some of the better-known novels or novellas that could have been an interesting approach as well. This, unfortunately, did not work that well for me.
Okay, it sounds like we're heading towards recommendations then, Brian. Do you want to go first? I guess our listeners may have a clue.
Sure, I will go first and make this nice and straightforward. No, I don't recommend this. apart from the one episode, the late Mr. Elvisham, I did not particularly enjoy it. I would not recommend it. As far as sort of modern, more supernatural or ghostly stories, I would recommend either Crooked House or Marshlands as much more interesting things to look at. I would not recommend this show.
Okay, well, I would probably just about agree with all of that, Brian. If it turns up on streaming included in your package, then look at The Late Mr. Elvisham and The Moth, but don't bother with the other two. While it remains at least £5 or £10 or more to buy it, I wouldn't recommend it at the moment. I think the Crooked House three stories is a great shout, Brian. I think that was really great for some supernatural stories with a linking narrative. For H.G. Wells, go back to 1984's The Invisible Man or to 2010's The First Men in the Moon. We enjoyed both of those tremendously. So I would go for those and not recommend The Nightmare Worlds of H.G. Wells. But as ever, if you feel we've got it wrong, if you think that these are stories worth considering, then please get in touch on the Gmail or on the Facebook group.
Absolutely. And those two are good choices for H.G. Wells that you mentioned as well, for sure. So, in summary, The Nightmare Worlds of H.G. Wells brings us a dramatized version of H.G. Wells, introducing and narrating four different stories from the works of H.G. Wells, which often deal with a central conflict between two different characters, and deal with these sort of period dramas that are meant to harken back to the time of H.G. Wells, and also, as we've mentioned, unfortunately have some of these issues of violence against women as a central part.
As ever, do please let us know your own views on the works of H.G. Wells, and particularly these four short stories that we've been looking at. And please come back next time when we're perhaps on safer ground, Brian. We're going back to another slice of classic BBC children's drama from the 1970s and the two series of Lizzie Drippin from 1973 and 1975. And we're going to have a little bit of fun about another television programme while we're at it, Brian.
Yes, that will definitely be a nice change from what we've been talking about this time. So until then, you can find all of our episodes, including the H.G. Wells ones and the ones that we've mentioned, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. And we announce the shows that we'll be covering a few months in advance there, and we always have some good discussions going on.
Indeed we do. And also find us as proud members of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you can find at voguenetwork.com. The Voice of Geeks, the place to go for all geek-related material, including podcasts, gaming, and lots of other fun going on as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England, signing off.